Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's the Round the Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Sydney Moncrief, Lee Mayberry, Joey Devine, Corliss Williamson, Gennaro Pargo, Sean Keane, Alvin Robertson, Todd Day, Isaiah Joe, special guest Lucky Sinister, Patreons Queen Onomandius, thank you Queen, Will Eusebio, thank you Will, Kevin Solkowski, thank you Kevin, musical guest Capital Offense featuring bass player Mike Huckabee, and now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine.
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of the Round Ball Rock podcast, and we are back with a brand new episode. I'm here, as always, with America's Uncle Dad, America's Uncle Fiance, comedian, writer, raconteur. He's in the raconteurs with Jack White. It's Sean Keane. Sean, how are you?
Steady as I go, I guess. Yeah. I am recording from beautiful Orchid, California, in the middle of the Central Coast, and I'm in like a businessman's office recording right now. Do you see all this wood? The darkness.
Well, our listeners don't see it, but I see it.
It's classy, and there is a framed Robin Ventura autographed Yankees jersey on the wall because he is also from here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Robin Ventura, baby. The Grand Slam that wasn't in 1999.
I only ever think of him getting punched in the face. Right.
That's true. Also, Joey, the one other thing we should mention about Robin Ventura is he kept the White Sox from making a wonderful decision that we would have loved. He was hired instead of Paul them Canerco. Going with player manager Paul Canerco.
Player manager is my dream. I hope I see a player manager or a player coach before
player coach
I die.
Would be fine.
Yeah.
Shouldn't Jason Kidd have done that in Brooklyn?
No, he didn't want to. Maybe. Yeah. You're right.
I mean,
right.
The first time. Byron
Scott
now.
Was their coach. You're right. Yeah. All right. We've got to get to our guest real quick. We have the first half of our show here. An author, a poet, a stand-up comedian. Look, earlier I referred to Sean as a raconteur, but that was sort of sarcastic. Our guest today is actually a raconteur. He wears many hats. It's our friend Bucky Sinister. Bucky, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Joe. Yeah, I'd say like I hadn't done stand-up in years. When pandemic hit and everything shut down, So do I feel better not doing stand-up comedy? Maybe I do.
Maybe I do. I definitely do. Yeah.
Should I continue this? And then, you know, the pandemic ended, comedy started back up, and I found out the feeling was mutual.
Yeah.
Didn't come back either. So I think Sean is the only one who actually offered me a gig.
That is true. Okay. Yeah. When I do my album release show, if you'd like to perform on it, I'll give you a little more advance notice than the last time I tried to book you. And I was like, oh, this is in 10 days. Can you do this?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things where you think about like, should I break up with someone? And then they just don't call you.
Yeah.
And
I think this is what I wanted, but I still feel kind of bad now.
Yeah. Like I didn't think this was going to be a long-term fit, but I wanted to go out on my own terms.
Well, on the plus side, though, you not doing stand-up has led to you writing another novel. Bucky, why don't you tell our listeners about what your new novel is?
Well, yeah, the one you're referring to is a memoir. It's called To Fear and Love Bambi Lake. If you lived in San Francisco during a certain time, you know, Bambi was notorious. And we met in 1989, at the world's, I don't know, the most low rent dive bar, gay bar called the Crystal Pistol, over on Valencia Street. And, it was a filthy place and we met over there and, became fast friends and we hung out a lot for the next 12 years. And, you know, just got into a lot of trouble together. She was a transgender nightclub singer. And, but we both, I don't know, we just, our personalities were just like a perfect match. And we just became really good friends. And so I just wrote a bunch of, Baby died 2020 and at the age of 70 from cancer. And here's the thing, as far as I know, she never quit living like at full tilt. Like, I just don't ever think she did, you know, and, you know, when I was at my worst, it was like around 30, 31, just really like hammering the drugs and alcohol, like on a, you know, professional level, you know, she was like 20 years older than me and like keeping up with me. And I never saw her, like, I saw her have a lot of tantrums. You know, she got arrested twice, but like, I never saw her like pass out or throw up or anything like that. Uh-huh. So I don't know how she did it. Like she was just kind of an icon. And, you know, and I wrote this thing like San Francisco had a lot of just real kind of like street celebrities, like people who were famous for like in a neighborhood, like they're famous for a couple of blocks. You know, it's like we may not even be famous on the other side of the bay. And she was definitely one of those people. And, you know, I just felt like I had these stories that, you know, I wanted to share. And she was never really like big time enough for me to get other people really interested in publishing these stories. So I'm like, well, okay, I'll just start this publishing company. And this is exactly the kind of projects that I want to do, where it's like, this is a story I want to tell that was really important to me and to like a really small group of people. And, you know, just to kind of save the local history, you know, of San Francisco and the scene and everything.
That's great. So where can our loyal listeners buy the Bambi Lake book, Bucky?
Well, funny you should bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
because I have a Kickstarter.
I'm a real
right now.
Byron Allen. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a Kickstarter for the hardcover copies, right?
Yeah. On the Kickstarter, like, you'll have a chance to purchase a hardcover copy. I'm not going to produce these at all, like once the Kickstarter's over. I will have a paperback copy, a little soft cover. You can find details at buckysinister.substack.com. That's the easiest thing. You can find the Kickstarter from there, or you can just search Kickstarter for it. And you should be able to find it. And then, you know, I'm going to have a release party at Medicine for Nightmares in San Francisco on February 24th. But right now I'm still in the crowdfunding stage. So I'm hoping to, you know, get people to, you know, contribute to that. But yeah, it's a small Kickstarter. I just don't want to. Hardcovers are like really kind of not cost effective to make if you're not making a huge run. Mm-hmm. So like basically I'm making these and sending these to people a little bit above cost. And, you know, so I don't want to make a run of hardcovers and have them sit in my garage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I want to
be like, okay, if, you know, so I think really the minimum I can make is 100. So yeah, it's basically, I got this very achievable Kickstarter. I've already got a good contribution going, and just hopefully looking for that Round Ball Rock bump.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's huge. Ask anyone. Ask Jad's dad Milo about what the Round Ball bump can do for friend. Yeah. You can look at that. You can get that at Mouse House Books.
Stop plugging another book when we're trying to plug Bucky's book, Sean. Bucky, we can't be plugging competing books.
Yeah. Are people allowed to subscribe at your Substack link?
Yeah. You just go to the Substack link and subscribe. Like, look, free subscriptions help a lot. Like, you know, it really now, like all the big publishers are really looking at, like, you know, a writer Substack and TikTok numbers. And, you know, if you guys can help my Substack become really successful, I won't have to start a TikTok. Please. I'm 54 years old. I don't want to do that. Really would like to leave that to the age appropriate people for whom it was made. The world does not need me, who's basically like a bachelor uncle, or maybe like a divorced PE coach or something. I don't know what my demographic kind of is, but the world doesn't need me on TikTok. So please subscribe to my Substack, you know, keep the world safe.
Well, I will say, Bucky, you know, TikTok might need someone like you to tell them that Osama bin Laden wasn't correct. I don't know if you saw that's what was happening last week.
Wait, he wasn't correct about what, Joey?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into that.
And you can find my bin Laden Substack at bushdid911.substack.com. A lot of great links out there. And every Tuesday is Chemtrail Tuesday. There probably is a subset called Bush Did 9/11. I've said it out loud.
All right. So the first thing we wanted Bucky to talk about is, so Bucky, you are a strong man, if you will.
Yeah.
Not only do you have the brains, you also have the brawn. You're a kettlebell. You do competitive kettlebell lifting.
Yes.
We wanted to talk about, and this came up with when Mr. Beast started to. When Mr. Beast started to. When his chocolate company was announced as being the Charlotte Hornets jersey patch, you wanted to talk to us about a couple of strongman YouTubers, correct?
Yes. You know, like God, okay, there's this whole generation of YouTube influencers now that grew up watching YouTube, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. if I can relate this for all the old people out there, it's kind of like, you know, the first wave of punk, like, wasn't made by punks. It was just made by weirdos in art school, and they had to kind of form what punk was. So you go to CBGB's, and it's like the Talking Heads, the Ramones, and they didn't grow up listening to punk. It wasn't there. Yeah. And then, like, there's this next wave immediately in the early 80s that came up of musicians that were into punk. And this is what's happening with YouTube. So it's like there are the new YouTubers. They grew up only watching YouTube, really. And, you know, the first generation wasn't influenced by other YouTubers now it is. So that's where Mr. Beast comes from. You know, he was about 11 or 12 years old when he started his YouTube channel. And, you know, that's been you know, you can literally watch them grow up on these things. And now we're seeing that in the fitness world as well. The big influencers right now, as far as they go, they're, there's these two guys, the Trend Twins, that are like overtly in, you know, just telling everyone they take Trenbolone, the PED, and they're huge. And they pretty much have the personality of like the Jersey Shore guys, but like they make the Jersey Shore guys look really small. They make them look like nobody. Those guys are huge. And there's another guy named Sam Sulek, and he's also like in his early 20s, and he's a monster. And what's going on now is basically like young people around, you know, 19, 20, 21 are all taking steroids and huge stacks of them and talking about what they take. And it used to be that like, you know, someone like Ronnie Coleman would be natural, win a couple of bodybuilding competitions, get his pro card. And then once he turned pro, then he would start taking steroids. That's what it was like. That was the level. And now it's just like, well, if I want to monetize my YouTube channel, I need to get huge. It's getting, getting views. There's that. And then the other way it's gone is like, you're either a huge young man or you're a cute young woman. There's a lean beef patty out there who's also generating tons of views. And she is just, you know, a young kind of like someone who looks like they would be into like anime or
an e-girl. Kind of like you can say
she's an e-girl, but she's actually a PED girl.
But she's actually like natty, but you know, she does these simple workouts, but it's, yeah, it's, I think it's just guys looking at her ass. That's what I'm going to
look. I mean, a lot of internet innovations are basically driven by looking at an ass like that in both good and bad ways. Like, people on the internet also like looking at a terrible ass too. Like, that's more early internet, but yeah, that don't rule out the, I mean, that's kind of how we've driven most advances in photography for the last 100 years, I would say.
So, Bucky, which of these YouTube strong people should Roundball Rock be trying to get to sponsor the show? Because again, I announced it earlier, but I'm going to announce it again. If you are a popular YouTuber with some kind of sham product you want to sell, sell it on Roundball Rock. Well, let's make a deal.
Oh, you don't really? Like, honestly, the professor has a huge YouTube channel now from the And One mixtape.
Yeah, he does. Oh. Yeah, he dresses it like Spider-Man.
Yeah, in schools, guys. But he's like, you know, like 40.
Yeah.
But he's still doing it. There are a couple of others I want to throw in there. One of the first guys to kind of figure out like YouTube fitness was this guy, Rich Piana, who he was technically a pro bodybuilder, but he never really got anywhere. And he was just, you know, just never really quite what the pro competitors wanted. So he thought, well, no, F it, I'll just get really huge. And, you know, the pro bodybuilders, they want some kind of like balance to your body. And he was just like, nah, screw it. I'm going to just get, you know, freakishly huge everywhere. And, you know, he just got covered in tattoos, and he did his YouTube channel, and he was the first one to really openly talk about steroid use, which I think is why all the young people are kind of modeling their thing after his. But he also dropped dead at like 41, just kind of fell over one day. And he was like, and the doctors were like, pretty much everything is wrong with him. when they did the autopsy, it's like, yeah, everything just kind
of escaped. All of it.
yeah, totally. And the other thing I used to follow a lot was this guy, Callie Muscle. this really just this enormous black man from Oakland who at first was doing like prison style workouts in Lake Merritt, where he would, you know, these crazy pull-ups and things like that. And then at some point he just decided, he figured out that, like, you know, when he went to buy a new car, he'd get more views. So he just stopped working out on camera and just started buying Rolexes and things. Mm-hmm. he also had a heart attack from all the steroids use. And that's when he came clean about it. He was actually, I just put in a lot of hard work. And then he almost died. And he went right on YouTube and said, you guys, I'm seriously taking a lot of steroids. And everybody was collectively knew it. But now,
here's a question I have for you, Bucky.
Other things like he only ate watermelon for several months. I think it was 2 months of only watermelon. And then, dropping weight on that. And then he did a water fast and things like that. And I think at some point he's going to try breatharianism, but I'm not sure.
It's so weird that YouTube now incentivizes longer videos so much more.
Oh,
yeah. Because it used to be that you tried to, like, kind of get your be concise because people had attention spans. And now you can really just explore the workout influencer space for quite some time.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
YouTube wants it like longer. Yeah.
Question for you, Bucky. Do you think all of these strongman YouTubers are mad that they don't have the name Mr. Beast? And Mr. Beast belongs to a doughy man who's like, I'm Jimmy. Hi.
it's kind of like when you hear of a band name like Five for Fighting, these guys are going to be like hardcore. Like, and then you're like, wait, what? You know, it happens a lot with band names. It's like, yeah, that band name should have been for like some kind of metal band, right?
And like, Mr. Beast, it's like, oh, we locked the guy in a store.
Yeah. yeah, totally.
He's also
a million bucks.
I learned a little bit about him and that he kind of came to his fame just by promoting a bigger YouTuber. Like he was like a PewDiePie super fan. I guess that's how he like made his name.
Yeah. Like these guys are all like, you know, it's like how like in one of the comic books, they'll throw the Punisher into a Spider-Man storyline.
Yeah.
And create the Punisher and things like that. And that's,
like helping him get over, you know,
all kind of in each other's things. And yeah, he kind of came up and got famous with other bigger ones that, you know, it's just ridiculous. But
yeah, Mr. PewDiePie is like had 1 week where he was like a backdoor pilot for the Mr. Beast show, basically.
Look, yeah. Here's what I'll tell you. YouTube is a bad thing that I watch all the time. And there's only one good YouTuber. And his name is Steve 1989 MRE Info, and he eats old MREs.
Oh, wow.
That's have you ever seen that guy?
His username is all of those words?
Yeah, it's Steve 1989 MRE Info, yeah.
I'm guessing he's 34 years old.
That sounds about right. 4 years ago, I mean, 4 days ago, he posted 2021 Danish 24-hour freeze-dried ration review, cold weather MRE taste test.
Does he do anything except taste testing the MREs?
No, he just eats MREs and very old ones.
What's the oldest one you've seen him eat?
There was one where he ate, hold on, what is the oldest? He ate like a hard tack from a Civil War ration.
Wow. All right, Joey, which NBA player would you say embodies the spirit of Steve 1989 MRE Info?
Reviews? Well, he's really
Does he have reviews
boring.
In the name?
He's really boring, but in a funny way. He'll be like, every time he goes, nice. That's what he says after it gets made. Nice. It's like Tim Duncan. He's like Tim Duncan because
he's like
boring.
Very effective. So, and
his biggest video.
Mark Price.
Yeah, his biggest video 7 years ago, 2.5 million views, is called 1863 American Civil War Hardtack Oldest Cracker Ever Eaten Military MRE Food Review Tasting Test.
That is like Tim Duncan. Because when Tim Duncan would trash talk people, he'd just say things like, watch this.
Yeah.
I wonder who's the oldest cracker that Jeffrey Dahmer ever ate.
Oh, hey.
So anyway, Steve 1989 MRE Info, if you're listening and you want to sell some MREs, do it here at Round Ball Rock. Again, we are looking for a YouTube sponsor. Guys, before we talk, we get to the thing Bucky wanted to talk to us about, I have one more thing I wanted to ask you about. Have you guys seen that James Dolan is deposing Adam Silver in his lawsuit against the Toronto Raptors?
That is tremendous. Like, there's no NBA figure that's been involved in more lawsuits, and that is counting Isaiah Thomas. because Dolan is constantly getting sued and yet suing even more than he is. So just before we get to this deposition part, just to be clear, James Dolan is basically suing every lawyer in the tri-state area who has ever had legal business with any MSG, a Madison Square Garden related entity, and is also being sued by most of them because he's also using creepy facial recognition technology to bar any of his critics or affiliated opponents. He's also had to pay out hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements over fraud related to the Las Vegas Sphere. And I believe he is being sued even like for new things related to the cost overruns on the fraud.
Now he's suing the Toronto Raptors because a coach that the Raptors hired took some second spectrum data when he got hired away from the Knicks. But the funniest thing that happened, guys, is so before he filed this lawsuit, James Dolan resigned from all of his positions on the Board of Governors Influential Advisory Finance and Media Committees. And here was his quote. Quote, given all that has occurred lately, I've come to the conclusion that the NBA neither needs nor wants my opinion.
It took him this long to learn that.
And I want to point out, we briefly mentioned him. The author of Jad's Dad, Milo, has done us a favor and has written a blues song featuring that quote. So here's that right now. Here's John Wilmes as James Dolan.
I've come to the conclusion that the NBA neither needs nor wants my opinion.
Thank you, John Wilmes. Buy Bucky's book on his Kickstarter, then buy Jad's Dad Milo from Mouse House Books.
And check out that song on James Dolan's new album, Sphere Wrangler, where he pretends to be from the Old West yet again.
Yeah, that gives me like really bad open mic flashbacks. I ran an open mic for 7 years in San Francisco, and there were guys that would come. It was kind of a poetry open mic, but there were guys who would come in there who we knew weren't welcome at the music open mics because they were horrible. And they're like, well, hey, it's an audience. And the only thing we could do really is to heckle them really badly. Sometimes that would work.
Bucky, could you maybe read something in poet voice for our listeners who are unfamiliar with what poet voice is?
Oh, sure. What should that be?
Maybe pull up like an NBA rule of any kind.
Okay, NBA official rules. Let's see. Okay, this is this next poem is called Rule Number 10, Violations and Penalties. Section 1, Out of Bounds. A player shall not be the last to touch the ball before it goes out of bounds. Penalty. Loss of ball. The loss of ball is awarded to the opposing team at the boundary line nearest the spot of the violation. Exception. On a throw-in, which goes out of bounds and is not touched by a player in the game, the ball is returned to the original throw-in spot. And that's like one type of poet voice. There's another that's just like, Then there's the kind of like maybe the slam poet voice, which is slightly different. This is section two, dribble. A player should not run with the ball without dribbling it. A player in control of a dribble who steps on or outside the boundary line, even though not touching the ball while outside the boundary line, shall not be allowed to return inbounds and continue his dribble. He may not even be the first player to touch the ball until he has reestablished a position in bounds.
Yeah. That's more of a Near Rican vibe. I had a girlfriend in college.
That kind of like really the fast patter style.
Yeah.
Really like it started on the East Coast and then probably at the New York Poets Cafe, like is it, and then kind of made its way. The first one's more like kind of that the kind of workshop MFA poetry voice.
Yeah, I remember we had a game sometimes when we would watch slam poets and try to figure out when the first time someone would refer to their genitals in one of those, and it was usually about 90 seconds was about the max. Be like, my flower, my sex, my body, feeling your body inside my body. Sorry. All right. Sorry to get so blue. I didn't mean to work blue on this one. It's a holiday podcast.
All right, Sean, do you want to talk to Bucky about his hilarious SI piece he sent us?
Yes, this is great. There is an article from, I believe this is 1986. Hold on.
It is 87. I couldn't really tell.
It's by Jack McCallum from Sports Illustrated.
It's early 1987. Early 1987. Okay. I'm going to read, and it is about how college coaches are losing their minds about the NCAA adding a three-point shot. I just want to talk about, here it is. Here's the opening paragraph by Jack McCallum. Over the last month or so, a monster has been terrorizing college campuses throughout the land. Known as the three-pointer, it sounds like something out of a bad B-movie. Not since Attack of the 50-Foot Woman have we been so certain of a monster's dimensions. This one measures 19 feet 9 inches. It cannot be brought down by heavy artillery or by the love of a beautiful woman, but it is vulnerable to paint remover. It doesn't stop cheerleaders or prey upon fraternity row wiseacres. Rather, it blows its hot, lethal breath on basketball coaches, recognizing them, no doubt, by their agonized expressions. Yes, the old coaches, it is, I have to say.
Some of them are new coaches now.
Some of them are new coaches. At this point,
like Coach K in 1987 young Coach K. is like
coming off really his first Final Four. This. Yeah. and it is just wild to think about this, because it's like college, it is crazy to remember. I mean, I kind of missed most of this, but coaches have already been just on their heels, because a year earlier than this, the NCAA has finally added a shot clock, which comes 32 years after the NBA added a 24-second clock. The NCAA adds a 45-second clock, and people like Dean Smith and Bobby Knight are just beside themselves. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when you see Michael Jordan's college stats, you kind of look and you're like, he's not really scoring that much. It's weird that they have Michael Jordan. Well, the reason is that North Carolina would get like a 4-point lead with 4 minutes left in the game, and then just pass the ball around for as long as they could until somebody got fouled. Essentially, Michael Jordan, because of his own coach, was basically playing like 34-minute basketball games. That was like the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
Happened until 1985. Like, you need to, like, that is something that when you read about like college basketball games, take that with a grain of salt. The coaches, a like fundamental strategy was how long you could just pass the ball around the perimeter as a part of winning basketball. So now college finally has a 30-second shot clock, and that took until 2015. It was actually 45 seconds until 1993. So some of these great players were really fighting everybody's reluctance to actually play basketball or shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was even accounts of earlier in basketball or the games that would be like, you know, 27 to 23 because, you know, no one would do anything and no one would really foul on purpose either.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you look at players like Marcus Haynes, who ended up playing for the Globetrotters. He could really just keep people from ever getting the ball. No one could really take the ball away from him. And it became like a kind of a Globetrotter staple back when they played actual teams. He would play for a long time. Just the other Globetrotters would sometimes sit down on the court and just dribble, and no one could get the ball from him. And that was kind of what basketball was for a long time.
Well, it's like, you know, that famous Bird versus Magic championship game. The final score of that game was 75-64.
Oh, yeah.
Which, when you consider what Bucky just said, maybe that's a little bit why people were like, this is the greatest basketball game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They cracked the mythical 70-point barrier. They thought it couldn't be done.
That was the 79 season in which Larry Bird also beat Sidney Moncrief's Razorbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry to bring that up, Bucky.
Well, I was about nine,
but it was like kind of the first time I was aware of like my team like losing a big game. You know, and I really kind of wasn't. I was at someone's house. We were like playing in the living room while the game was on, and all the dads were watching, and we were like playing with like action figures and stuff, and I just read the whole room just got really dark and dour. Like, what happened?
Did you guys know that game is still the highest rated basketball game of all time?
Of
any kind, yeah. Estimated audience for that game, the 79 championship game, was 40 million people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, really at the time, this was also like a pre-cable era. Like, this is how old it was. Like, a lot of places didn't get cable until the early 80s. So you had what was on the networks, and you know, you might not even get one of those channels in clearly. It was a weird time for TV. TV that just was horrible. It was so bad, and it definitely like sports are the best thing on. And that was the thing. It was like, well, I wonder what the other two channels were showing at that time was, but it was probably like Maud or something.
Yeah,
maybe Hello Larry. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just going to read you a couple of NCAA final scores. The legendary Michael Jordan and James Worthy, Sam Perkins, North Carolina team beating Georgetown. That one was 63-62, which is like basically a normal halftime score in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
The game before, North Carolina, the year before, lost 63-50 in a blowout. And then you've also got these the classic North Carolina State upset of Akeem Olajuwon. That game finished 54-52.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of scoring. And then there's an insane, the legendary Villanova upset is 66-64. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And then there is a bizarre, incredibly high-scoring game that goes 83-79, where Danny Manning's Kansas Jayhawks win the Oklahoma Sooners. I feel like maybe Oklahoma's coach had not adjusted to the shot clock yet, because he played his starters the entire game.
Well,
they just played the whole game.
Do you want to know the final score of that Jimmy V game? Was the one where he's running around on the court?
Yeah, yeah.
54-52.
54-52. There you go. Yeah, yeah. And in the Oklahoma box score in that loss, Dave Seeger, Mookie Blaylock, and Harvey Grant played 40 minutes. Stacey King got a lot of rest, playing 39 minutes, and they went with reserve Terrence Mullins, gave them 7 minutes off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
They got a little tired, I think.
Yeah,
Kansas basically won
by just being like, you know what? We'll let Scooter Barry play 9 minutes. Why not? He can probably do something. His dad's a Hall of Famer. Even Danny Manning rested for 4 minutes. And maybe that teams,
college teams back then, a lot of times they would only carry like 7 players in the tournament.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's made of 5 starters and 2 backups. Like, for real, like that's, you know, and so you see all these things and like, yeah, everybody's playing like, you know, like you look at like the Larry Bird games, he's playing 40 minutes a game.
Yeah. Well, he had to because he was the only actual good player on the team. So, Bucky, what do you think is the thing that will scare college coaches next?
Oh, wow. It could be. I don't know, man. I hadn't thought about that.
Is it the alley-oop? It's the alley-oop, right? Or it's these Victor Wembanyama-style tall guys, right, that can dribble? That's going to scare them next, right?
They're going to have to wear, like, heavy shoes.
Yeah, like,
something.
Coach Calipari's going to have to, is going to be like, oh, you mean I have to tell my center that he's allowed to dribble the ball and shoot it instead of just, like, boxing out, which is, again, what he told DeMarcus Cousins, Kat, and Bam Adebayo, that they weren't allowed to touch or dribble the ball.
It's hard to say. I think really, like, with a lot of the technology coming through, that, you know, there'll be some kind of thing where they want you to wear some kind of Google glasses or whatever during a game. And, you know, and I think the coaches will definitely stop at that. And then, you know, there's probably going to be some people who break out of high school that are not on AAU teams, but are just like, you know, kind of TikTok basketball stars. Mm-hmm. And they have to recruit some kid who's like good on TikTok, you know. Mm-hmm. I see it more like that. I don't know what other rule changes they might have, but, just definitely something about like, just kind of like that culture thing of, just coming out of a different social media presence or whatever.
And Sean, do you want to read some of your favorite quotes from this?
I would like to read some of my quotes.
Of this coaches being scared of the 3-point line article.
Coach K sounds like he's 100 years old at this point rather than the 212 years old he is right now. They say he considers the monster a threat to America's Puritan ethic. He says you should have to work hard to get a basket because he played under the internet. There's a coach from Dayton named Don Donaher. I mean, there's a reason that guy's angry all the time. His name's Don Don. To me, it's just like a game show. In this world we live in now, we're into wild thrills. And then the coach of TCU, Jim Killingsworth, says, if you pick up a paper today and read that they can't find me, I'll be over on the Trinity University Bridge with a rock tied around my neck. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys have freaked out. The best quote from a player is that Reggie Miller just brags about how easy three-pointers are now, which is very funny. And then... UNLV comes back from 21 points down to win the preseason NIT. I don't think that does that even exist anymore. And they beat Western Kentucky. The Western Kentucky coach says, I just hope the rules committee comes to its senses and allows college basketball to return to sanity. And then American hero Jerry Tarkanian, the coach of UNLV, says, if he gets beat by it, the coach ought to shut up.
Yeah.
It was a, there was a sports writer named Ring Lardner, who is also one of America's best short story writers. Uh-huh. And he wrote a piece for The New Yorker, I think in the 20s, about how Babe Ruth was ruining baseball, hitting home runs. Uh-huh. And like, you know, what happened to the drag bunt? Yes. Like, you know, it, before like Babe Ruth came along, the home run record was some like 29 home runs or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
And he was annihilating things. He was actually swinging for a power swing. And, you know, people loved it. People wanted to see it. Turns out people enjoyed seeing someone do something incredibly hard. And
yeah, when you used to see these, early baseball, the second baseman is often like a batting champ and sort of like not really that athletic a guy, because your third baseman basically had to be a shortstop because he was fielding like five bunts a game.
Yeah.
So for a long time, like the third baseman who led the league, like the A's had a guy named Home Run Baker. And because he was like, it was so unprecedented to see a third baseman, you know, it's like a little life, basically a shortstop playing third. And Home Run Baker, I mean, he had a year where he hit 12 home runs in a season. And so literally they just call him Home Run Baker. His name, I don't actually know what his real name is. Oh, it's John Baker. But even his like official baseball reference page is like Home Run Baker. Couldn't get enough of those dingers. He finished with 96 of them in just a 13-year career. I mean, he didn't lead the league in home runs four times. I'm not knocking it, but the total number of home runs he hit in those four seasons was 42. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's like every time there's like an innovation in any sport, you know, they there's a lot of people who say it's ruined. And, you know, I know there are like a lot of people in pro football who didn't like the forward pass and that ruined the integrity of the game, you know, and it's just kind of unreal to think about now, but you know.
I want to say, I believe Teddy Roosevelt heavily lobbied for the legalization of the forward pass because like 20 people a year would die in the Ivy League just playing football.
Yeah.
Because you just beat the hell out of each other. And I'm sure people were like, well, I won't watch a single more game. It's all harness racing and bare knuckles boxing for me from now on.
Yeah. There was also like a lot of people who were upset that Dylan started playing an electric guitar.
Yeah. Right. Well, the most famous one of those people is actually Pete Seeger.
Although,
who apparently grabbed a fire axe to try and chop the sound booth up when Dylan started playing the electric guitar.
Although Pete Seeger claimed later that the mix was just terrible and that he didn't really care about the electric guitar, but there was so much feedback. He's like, they're ruining Bob's set. But
That's a lie. All right. I think that's our time with you, Bucky. Sean and I have to go through every team for our Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on, Bucky. Bucky, once again, where can our listeners pre-order your book?
I would suggest that people go to buckysinister.substack.com and then you'll find Kickstarter information on there, or you can search Kickstarter either way. But please subscribe to my Substack for free. It helps.
And could you also tell us where to buy your delightful novel, Black Hole?
Oh, yeah. Black Hole's like, you know, that was published by an actual publisher in New York. So it's available everywhere. You can go buy that on Amazon or at your local indie bookstore. You can ask them to order it for you. It came out in 2015. So I doubt they have it on their shelf, but they'll order a copy for you and you can get it there. Anywhere you buy books.
It's really good. I have read it twice.
Oh, really? Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thanks, Bucky. You're the best. Happy Thanksgiving. All right, Sean, you know what episode it is, right?
It's a tradition unlike any other. Mm-hmm.
It is our pre-Thanksgiving episode, which means, Sean, you took half the league. I took the other half of the league to figure out what each team is thankful for this Thanksgiving, just like that annoying thing your mom always does, where she makes everyone go around the table and say what they're thankful for. Sean, you had which divisions?
We split it up. I took the Atlantic, the Central, and the Southwest to give us an even geographical split, whereas you got the Southeast, the Northwest, and the Pacific. So we each get an ocean, we each get a west.
So, Sean, why don't we start with one of yours? And let's start with the Atlantic Division. Sean, what are the Boston Celtics thankful for?
They're thankful for Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard, Luke Kornet, Svi Mykhailiuk, Kristaps Porzingis, SPF 50, the Plessy versus Ferguson Supreme Court decision, and the lack of washcloths in NBA locker rooms. They like white people in Boston, Joey.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going for. Okay, there. Okay. Sean, what about the New York Knicks? What are they thankful for this year?
Joey, the New York Knicks are thankful that the sex robot from the Sphere is occupying James Dolan's attentions in Las Vegas, so he can't mess with the team. Also, he has so many Sphere-related lawsuits that they've kept him from attacking the New York City legal community, and that means that Emmanuel Quickley and Quentin Grimes do not have to hold the Sphere balloon at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Great. What about the New Jersey Nets, Sean? What year is it? Brooklyn Nets, Sean, what are they thankful for?
They're thankful that there's plenty of leftover Wolf and Shepherd casual men's shoes still sitting in the team offices for last minute holiday shopping. Also, they're thankful that Kyrie Irving will not be delivering his annual speech about how Pilgrim's Landing on Plymouth Rock was a myth because the world is flat and you could never cross the Atlantic Ocean like that.
Mm-hmm. Sean, what are the Philadelphia 76ers thankful for?
Well, they're actually thankful that Nick Batum brought everyone gifts, red wine, striped black and white shirts, and expensive cigarettes to celebrate French Thanksgiving, which actually happens the second Tuesday of November.
And Sean, what about finally our neighbors from up north, the Toronto Raptors? What are they thankful for?
They're thankful that Coach Darko does not have a band, and unlike former coach Nick Nurse, has not written and performed a catalog of what he calls Thanksgiving carols.
Sean, where do you want to go next?
Let's go to the Southeast Division, okay. Joey.
I'm ready.
Joey, what are the Atlanta Hawks thankful for?
The Atlanta Hawks are thankful that this is the first year John Collins isn't there, because it made Thanksgiving dinner very awkward that everyone wanted him not to be there.
Yeah, that was rough. Okay, well, how about the Orlando Magic, Joey?
The Orlando Magic, I did a player-specific one. Jonathan Isaac is thankful he can start talking about the war on Christmas now.
Oh, that's great. Okay, what about the Charlotte Hornets, Joey?
The Charlotte Hornets are thankful for absolutely nothing, because Thanksgiving is a good thing for good people, and people who defend Miles Bridges don't deserve to have it.
Yes, he's terrible.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, all right. Let's go to some, maybe a happier team, the Miami Heat. Joey, what are the Miami Heat
Heat are thankful for the unlimited supply of hair gel and Pat Riley's contract stipulations.
I like that.
Look, had a hard time with that one, gonna be honest.
And by the way, did you see Jimmy Butler's skyhook? Any of the footage of that, Joey?
I did not, Sean.
He shot a skyhook in the lane. It's not really that memorable, except as he shoots it, he goes, "Skyhook!"
It's pretty good.
And I wish he just would keep doing that. Fade away! Okay, and finally, what are the Washington Wizards thankful
for? I did another player-specific one for this. Jordan Poole is thankful that none of the Wizards are punching him in the face, even though they all want to.
I like that. I mean, that's something to be grateful for, I gotta say.
All right, Sean. Let's go to the Central Division. What are the Milwaukee Bucks thankful for?
Joey, the Milwaukee Bucks are thankful that Dame Lillard has never released an album of holiday raps.
We have a similar one for another team coming up shortly. Just a warning.
Also, they're thankful that Giannis Antetokounmpo brought them all moon pies, because he's never tried them. He likes trash American food, Joey.
All right, Sean, what about my favorite NBA team, the Indiana Pacers? What are they thankful for?
They're thankful that owner Herb Simon let everyone play paintball in one of his abandoned malls while Rick Carlisle played piano in the courtyard.
What about the biggest bummer team there is, the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, they've lost 12 in a row, Joey. They're thankful for James Wiseman's eloquent Mandarin language pregame motivational speeches, which are 95% just apologies for how he played in the previous game.
If he played at all. All right, what about the Chicago Bulls?
They're thankful for Alex Caruso's leadership in the Thanksgiving kitchen, his physical presence mashing potatoes, sticking right to the oven as pies bake, and harassing the turkey with constant basting.
And finally, Sean, the Cleveland Cavaliers, what are they thankful for?
They're just thankful that Kevin Love's not there angrily shoving side dishes at Darius Garland and Chetty Osman because he didn't get enough touches of the drumstick.
I mean, to be fair to Kevin Love, it was Colin Sexton he was mad at most of the time, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He did not want to live in sex land. Actually, I mean, he was almost sixth man of the year once Sexton was gone. So fair enough.
All right, Sean, where do you want to go for next?
Let's stay in that region, I guess. I mean, the most equivalent areas, I guess, the Northwest Division. Okay. Joey, what are the Minnesota Timberwolves thankful for?
The Minnesota Timberwolves are thankful that Thanksgiving is a day no NBA players will release a podcast pointing out that no one defended Rudy Gobert when Draymond Green tried to murder him.
I mean, they look, Draymond was in the wrong, but do they have a point? A little bit. Also, Carl Anthony Towns was trying to help him. He's just bad at helping people succeed at things. You know what I mean? It's not really the will was there.
I'm
well,
just
not,
saying, I think yeah. Every NBA player podcast has been like, Cat's a bitch.
Oh, no, it was really rough. It was really rough. Like when Paul George is questioning, I mean, people like Paul George, I guess, but I don't know, man. It's rough stuff for a
the
guy.
Pat
who, again,
Beverly one is incredible because he was like the leader of that team 2 years ago. And he's like, Cat's a giant cat. How dare he not punch Draymond in the face?
Pat Beverly will just say anything. He is definitely getting hired by ESPN. He had a quote where he was talking about how bad the Magic were because, like, they had three players on ESPN's top 100 ranking. And I was like, you were just on the Bulls, which had four. All right. Sorry to detour our thankfulness. The Denver Nuggets. What are the Denver Nuggets thankful for?
They're just thankful Mike Malone gets to be drunk again, dude.
Yeah. Dude, did you see his ejection?
I did see his ejection.
It was so funny because sometimes you'll see like a baseball manager who's going to get thrown out. But that's different because there's only one technical in baseball and you're gone. Michael Malone went out there and walked towards the ref to complain and just didn't even break stride. Like he got a technical, 4 steps later, he got another technical, 5 steps later, he was in the tunnel heading to the locker room. It was like, I've never seen such a complete, like, yep, this is happening.
Wow. You have seen it though before because, don't forget, Don Nelson has admitted to getting kicked out of games on purpose before because he wanted to go drink beer.
Yeah, I mean, it was just weird that Mike Malone was in motion the entire time and, like, didn't... I'm sure he said something terrible, but it wasn't, like... It was just a weirdly non-confrontational, like, I'm just going to walk at this ref, and then he's going to eject me, and I'm just going to keep going. Yeah, so he ended up watching the game with Luka. Okay. How about the Oklahoma City Thunder, Joey? What are they thankful
for? Well, Sean, the Oklahoma City Thunder are actually thankful because they, this year, are the most thankful team in the league because they are the only team that has an actual pilgrim on their team. Have you seen Chet's beard? It's a Plymouth Rock-ass beard, dog.
Yeah, he didn't, you know...
He should be playing games. He didn't fall to the Thunder.
The Thunder fell on us.
Should be forced to be playing games with shoes with buckles on them, is what I'm saying.
Miles Standish-ass center.
Yeah. The only thing that can stop Chet Holmgren is the Vitch. That's right. A witch with two, where the W is spelled with two V's. All right. Sean, I assume you want to hear about the Utah Jazz next.
I do want to hear about the Utah Jazz next, please.
This is one of the only basketball ones I picked. They're thankful for Keontae George. You want to know why? Because they don't have to pretend Talen Horton Tucker is a point guard anymore. One of the strangest things that a team did for a year and a half.
And
in
even
my
the Laker fans
life.
Were like, oh, he could do it. He could do it. Well, I mean, it's weird. It's weirder that Jeremy Sochan is doing it, but this whole season is like a prank that Coach Pop is playing.
Yeah.
And then finally, what are the Portland Trailblazers thankful for, Joey?
They're happy they don't have to pretend Dame's new single, Dame's Giving, is good.
Oh, he's the worst rapper.
All right, Sean. The Southwest Division. I want to go from the bottom up this time. What are the San Antonio Spurs thankful for?
Joey, they're thankful for the Riverwalk, the most beautiful destination in the southwestern United States, where there's churro stands every 50 feet, and you can visit the manufacturing plant of paste picante salsa. I assume.
I heard the Riverwalk is just 20 HEBs next to each other. HEBs as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, the other thing they're thankful for is that by rule, the Spurs coyote now has to wear a series of bells on his ankles to warn passerby that he might be in the area.
It's great.
He's a maniac.
Sean, I can't imagine the Memphis Grizzlies are thankful for anything, but what do you think they're thankful for?
Well, they are thankful that by rule, Ja Morant is no longer allowed to threaten the team for hours with a traditional pilgrim-style musket. I don't know why they ever allowed that, but and also he would always try to make the theme horny Thanksgiving, and I was like, come on, man. Steven Adams doesn't want that.
What are the Pelicans thankful for?
They're thankful that at the team dinner, Zion will have plenty of soda, which comes from his own bathroom where he poops.
I want to talk about the Pelicans court, NBA court, real quick. That's the only good one. That should be their court all the time.
Their regular court looks crazy, and the tournament court's better.
Tournament court looks, the voodoo themed court, it rules. I love it. Keep that one forever. The haunted mansion ass court.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's clearly buried on a. It's clearly built on a cemetery with all the things that have happened. Yeah. All right.
All right. The Houston Rockets, Sean, second place in this division. Incredible.
They're allowed that Ime Udoka is not allowed to even make eye contact with anyone else's girlfriend.
And finally, Sean, the Dallas Mavericks.
They're thankful that the health department has expressly forbidden Mark Cuban to inject the team's turkey with Botox, and Pants DJ is not allowed to have any role whatsoever in the preparation of food.
Great.
All right, let's head to the Pacific.
All right.
Jimmy, what are the Golden State Warriors thankful for? Actually, let's do that last. Should we do it last?
Okay, sure.
No,
whatever you want to hear.
Okay. Let's see what the Sacramento Kings are thankful for.
The Sacramento Kings are thankful that Domas Sabonis learned how to spatchcock the turkey from Draymond Green this year. stomping on it is unorthodox, but it cooks so much quicker now.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's nice to know. That's good. What are the Lakers thankful for, Joey?
Oh, they're thankful that LeBron hasn't figured out he can use the Taco Tuesday voice to say Turkey Thursday because he's too busy pretending to like football.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, what a fraud.
Turkey Thursday!
It's like, you actually can trademark that one. No one else wants that one. You go nuts, buddy.
You know, The Wall is back, Joey. Did you see that?
I did not see it. It's Chris Hardwick. I don't know still who's hosting host. It.
We're gonna find out right now. I'm sorry. I know this is not what we're doing right now. Season 5 of The Wall.
Wow.
It's been, I guess it's been back for a while. It is still, there's a Spanish language version of The Wall, which mm-hmm. I assume is called La Pared. Mm-hmm. It appears that Chris Hardwick is still hosting.
Incredible. Wow. What the just the quietest game show host in the world.
Yeah.
Cannot. Don't want anyone to know that cancellation didn't fully stick, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Right. Joey, what are the LA Clippers thankful for?
The Clippers are happy that today is the only day of the year Paul George insists on people calling him Pilgrim P.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only thing they're thankful for, though. Admittedly, there is one positive about eating Thanksgiving with the Clippers, and that's at the end of their big dinner, everybody has their own
toilets.
All right, everyone.
All right, what are the Phoenix Suns thankful for, Joey? Oh,
they're thankful for that this year they don't have to beg their 7-foot center to stop playing video games and come eat Thanksgiving dinner with the rest of the family.
I mean, that is tough. All right, and finally, mm-hmm. the Golden State Warriors. What are they thankful for this year?
Honestly, Sean, nothing. This team is miserable, and I don't even want to think about them.
I talked about them today on Canadian radio, and at the end, the last question was, where is Klay Thompson playing next year? And, I mean, my best prediction was the United Arab Emirates somehow. Like, it's going to be one of those, like, Neymar deals where... Mm-hmm. And he's gonna really light it up there, I gotta say.
I mean, Klay had his best game of the season last night. And in the post-game press conference, Steve Kerr still was just talking about how he needs to play better.
I mean, I looking at it, I'm like, man, betting on yourself and like playing out the season instead of taking the extension sometimes sounds really good in theory. He has not earned himself a lot of money this year, Joey. I mean, he is earning $40 million, but for future money, coming back on a mid-level exception.
Sean, finally, what are you thankful for?
Oh, well, I'm thankful for Tyrese Halliburton. I'm thankful for Tyrese Maxey. I'm thankful for Tyrese, the actor, who's given us so much joy in the past films. But most of all, Joey, I'm thankful for the Round Ball community. We get to meet so many nice people. We've had such great support from everybody on the Discord, which you can join for just $3 a month on patreon.com/roundrockpod. But just all the people we've met, our friend Keith Parrish, the NBA's best Twitter account, our friend Dave Dufour, our friend John Wilms, our friend Corbin A. Smith, all the people we got to meet.
Katie Heindel.
I guess Katie Heindel, our friend Katie Heindel, our friend Bob Silverman. I'm leaving out some people.
Because you're leaving out lots of people.
I'm leaving out lots of people that have helped us, but I really enjoy the Discord Roundball community, the basketball community, everybody who's been nice enough to come on our show and tolerate our nonsense.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Now Sean asked me what I'm thankful for.
Joey, what are you thankful for?
The video game Alan Wake 2. All right, that's our show. Sean, is there anything you'd like to plug?
I guess if you're in Elk Grove on Saturday the 25th, I'll be there. I'll be at Rooster Teeth Feathers the first weekend of December. And at the Sacramento Punchline the first week of January, with the great Sheng Wang. Get your tickets soon because they've already added 2 shows because 5 of them are sold out.
Love Sheng. One of the funniest men in the world.
So good. Oh, and then also, you know, Giants Baseball Insider, Yard Barker, Golden State of Mind.
And then, as for me, you can always follow me on Twitter, at Frankie Muniz, where 3 days ago, I retweeted an account called NASCAR Man, which tweeted a clip of Jeff Gordon and Frankie Muniz appearing together in an episode of Spin City.
Yes.
And I retweeted it and said, 26 years ago, maybe one day I'll be his favorite driver.
Wow.
We can only hope, Frankie.
Yeah. I did write a song this week, Joey.
Oh, great. What was it,
Sean? We have a new one. This is one that's kind of for no one at all, I have to say. It's a modern lover's song called I'm Aiton. And it's okay, about DeAndre Aiton.
That's great. That'll be playing under us shortly. Trust the process.
Trust the process.
And shut it down. I am definitely thankful for Alan Wake too, but I'm also thankful for everything Sean said and meeting all of you, and I love you all very much. Bye.
Bye.
I started this 2K game 3 times already today, but I took my controller, I put it back in place, I put the headset in my face. I still don't know if I should have signed the offer sheet with Indiana and leave the playoff race. So here's your chance to send me to Portland and wish that I had never even asked for a trade. I saw you make a deal last year for Hippie Kevin. I had to tell Monty, okay, I can't do pace and space. So the song today concerns Hippie Kevin. He's always stoned. He just smoked an eighth. I read Woj today, explained the deal for Hippie Kevin. I told Monty today, I don't wanna play this way. Say he's stoned, Hippie Kevin. Now get this, I'm eight, and I want to leave this place. Now look, I like KD, I like Hippie Kevin, but I'm eight, and our owner used to do blackface. I said, I'm eight. I'm eight. I'm proud to say, well, I'm eight, and he's wearing a big meat brace. Now I've watched James Jones around here. I've watched him deal for guys who are always hurt, you know, like Bradley Beal. Look, but if these vets, they really aren't lame, then why did they get blown out in elimination games? Why always choking like they did bong rips? Well, I'm eight, and I'm in a bad headspace. I'm certainly not stoned like Hippie Kevin. I'm eight, and I wanna leave this place. I'm eight. Oh, and they call me Dominatin'. Dominate. I'm Aiton, and my 2K skills on commonplace. All right, Rip City, what do you say? I'm eight. Tell Chauncey Phillips now. I'm eight. Oh, tell Joe Cronin now. I'm eight. Yeah, I'm eight. And Tusk is my new favorite place.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.